Hello and welcome to Two Blokes Trading. Join us, the two blokes, Philip and Petter, as we dive deep into the complex world of financial markets and home trading. Today's episode is sponsored by BizIntra Financial Academy. BizIntra offers sponsored trading programs that have been developed by professional traders. Don't pay a fortune to learn how to trade. Simply sign up by using one of their partner brokers and receive trading education and signals by institutional traders. Make sure you log on to www.bizintra.com/two blokes for everything related to the markets. You won't be disappointed. And we're live.
What's up?
What's up, P-Man?
We're on to another episode.
Yeah, we're on to a different type of topic for today. Something new. Something I think that will interest a lot of people.
Hold on. Where's the introduction? Like, I thought you were going to do an introduction.
Yeah, I was. Okay, I forgot. Okay. You do it for a change. So why do I always have to do an introduction?
I did it last time, Phil.
Okay. Hello, everybody. My name is Philip Hennigan, and I am your host for today's Two Blokes Trading Podcast. And my co-host is P-Man. Say hello, P-Man.
Hello, P-Man.
Hey, is that all right?
Yeah, that's good.
Good.
Thanks.
Good.
Yeah, you're messing with my juju now, so.
Okay. How are you doing today?
Well, you know, today I've actually, it's been a pretty balanced day. I've stepped in dog shit, but I won a lottery ticket, so it balanced out.
Awesome. Oh, God, I had quite the day, but a lot of people don't know this about me. I actually, I enjoy painting, you know. So, like I said, if I never discovered financial markets, I would probably be a painter and decorator because I actually really enjoy painting and decorating. So, yeah, my other half has asked me to paint my house, so that's what I'm in the process of doing, and I find it so de-stressing and rewarding. So,
well,
I'm really enjoying it.
That probably has something to do why you're such a good trader, because you like to watch paint dry.
True, that's a strange analogy. Yeah,
but... Well, it's the art of patience.
Okay, well. Speaking of having patience, you have to be patient next week because there is not much going on in the role of news. So I know I always start these podcasts off with news, and I always remind you every time you listen. So here goes. But nothing's happening on Monday. Nothing at all. That, in my opinion, is going to move the markets. I do have my own opinion of things to watch out for next week, so I will run through those. But if there is anything to look at, I would say if you're going to trade the London Open, nothing really happens until Tuesday. So Tuesday, inflation report hearing in the UK, the time's undecided, so we don't know when that's going to happen. And also at 12:30, ECB monetary policy. So keep an eye on sterling and also keep an eye on the euro for Tuesday. And nothing then until Friday. We have absolutely nothing that I believe will cause major volatility. And on Friday, it's all about Canada. And there's a heap of news coming out for Canada on Friday. So everything at 1:30 GMT. Keep your eyes peeled. A lot of retail traders are going to be looking at the markets in around that time. So you're probably going to see absolutely nothing happening in the Canadian market up until 1:30, and then boom. So that's my opinion. But on a side note, this isn't actually on any economic calendar or anything. I was just telling Petter about it, that I have a feeling that something's going to be some resolution is going to come up in the UK. It may not happen next week, it may not happen the week after, but just everyone should just be watching sterling, because if they obviously the deal that's happening with Brexit is not good. You have to read the papers and see that everyone's disappointed that she's gotten a worse deal than before, or she's trying to push for a worse deal than they even had before, and that's not going to fly with them. So if they actually get a deal and it's positive, I think that'll be pretty positive for the sterling. So I'm not saying there's a trade there or anything. Just it's something that just be worth watching. And, you know, this might be a lesson for some people to understand how the market actually works. When something like this happens, what is the cause and effect of this person doing that? So it'll be a bit of an education for people. What do you think, P-Man?
Yeah, I think Theresa May is in a bit of harsh weather right now, and there's a bit of conflict in the country and what they think about the deal. But it's an interesting thing that you said about, like, you would actually probably use this as in your analysis if you're going to take trades further on, like 6 months down the road. Maybe not 6 months, but like 3 months, maybe.
It all depends on where how far I see the upside potential in something like sterling. You know,
yeah.
So
well, we talked about,
like, you know, the way I like to size positions. Like, my stop losses aren't like yours or anything like that. Like, I like to, because I know Petter likes to zoom right down. Like he'll actually. Why am I telling you? Why am I telling everyone your strategy?
Well, you should be my guest.
Okay, I'll correct me if I'm wrong, but I know you drill. You start off quite far out, so you can even go as far as a. Do you ever look at quarterly charts?
Yeah, I do. So yeah, right. Of course I do. But I use all the charts as what it's called is multiple time frame analysis. So I just use the charts to confirm or deny my basic view. And if I can get all the way down to the 4 hour and 1 hour, then I'll probably find a trade somewhere.
Yeah. So that's what I was going to say. Pretty much that you zoom in, we'll say, into the market. You start off with a very high time frame and keep getting closer and closer and closer. And the reason for that is to get the best possible stop loss. I mean, if I like, with, no, you're not. I know you're not like a person who takes a 5 point stop loss or anything like that. That's ludicrous. But I don't know how low your stop losses are. What would be your minimum? What would be the lowest you would take on a stop loss?
Well, this is important. You have to factor in spread and commission in trades, you know, and like taking anything less than 20 points is probably my max, I would say. Yeah, because then it just gets too expensive to pay the broker. And I'm not a big fan of putting too much money in the pockets of the broker. So yeah, 20 points is probably my minimum.
That's the truth, yeah. So I think somebody recently asked me about opening an account he wanted to trade equities. And he asked me, you know, how much does it cost? You know, and in some cases, I won't name names of brokers, but I can remember one particular broker you and I came across a few years ago. And I think it was 30 euro entry, 30 euro exit.
Yeah, I think the round trip was about 60 bucks or something.
60,
I think,
yeah.
And they also, they did the maths the old way, you know. So I think, or I at least blew a good amount of cash miscalculating all my positions, but that was at the start, you know. So it's a valuable lesson to know how your broker works.
Yeah, well, you're lucky in the sense, though, with the Forex, you don't have the same kind of criteria. So most brokers don't charge commissions on Forex anyway. So you're actually okay. You just pay the spread. But if you want to trade equities, you're in for a ride. It's an expensive round trip. It's actually harder to trade equities on a small account. So, or else you have to lever up a little bit, you know, to make it worth your while. But you want to make sure you're right, you know, because if you lever up, let's say 5 times, yeah, once you're down 20%, your account's empty.
Yeah.
So that's the what's it called? A double-edged sword.
Double-edged sword of margin.
Well, I think today's topic, anyway, we were discussing earlier on. First off, before I start talking about it, I want to actually address something with everybody who listens to this podcast. I want to find out whether we are actually are we going into the details that we're going into, are they basic enough, or, you know, because obviously I see people joining the Facebook group all the time. And we ask a few, like, simple 3 questions, a bit about yourself, you know, your experience. And I would say 90% of the people say beginner. So I don't want to, or I know you don't want to either, Petter. You don't want to confuse anybody. We don't want to scare people off by, you know, because like I think last week, maybe it was the week before that, I started talking about the yield curve, the 2 years and the 5 year spread between the yield on the U.S. bond market.
Yeah,
I thought about that afterwards. You know, I thought maybe.
Well, I think it's a bit hard from the data that we can actually view from the site and the information we get from the applications on the Facebook page that it's a bit difficult to find out what kind of demographic we're actually speaking to. So I would highly recommend everyone to send in some information about what you guys are struggling with in the market, so we could have like decent topics for you at your level.
Mm. Yeah, we don't want to go over the top. Today's now, and think about what we're actually going to start discussing, leading indicators. But anyway, I'm going to try and simplify this one as best I can. And
for anybody who is a bit confused now, like leading indicators is probably more based on the fundamental side of trading. So, yeah. Mm.
So there are, I guess there are professional traders. So a professional trader is a person who has either worked in an investment bank or a hedge fund and has experience managing clients' money. And then there are professional retail traders. A retail trader who takes the professional approach, I would say. And then you have just all out retail traders who make up probably 90% of the world's traders, I would say. So, in an investment bank, because you're managing other people's money or a hedge fund, you can't just rely on technical analysis like most retail traders do. It doesn't mean they don't use technical analysis. Believe me, they all use technical analysis. But when you're managing somebody else's money, like recently, put it this way, I spoke to a company they wanted me to come on board with them. And they asked me my returns, and I told them. And they were impressed by my returns. But I also explained to them, listen, I know that my returns are more than the bank, you know, or more than your fund in a percentage terms. But I'm allowed to take a lot more risk than you guys because it's my money. But when you're managing other people's money, you cannot take that kind of risk. You have to start reducing risk the whole time. And also your client tells you how much risk they're interested in taking. You know, I remember when I was first getting involved in investing and I met with a broker about, you know, investing some of the capital that I had. And he suggested to me, fill out this form. And it's basically just, they go into detail about how risky are you? You know, like how much pain can you take type of thing. Most people go to these kind of people and say, I don't want to take any risk at all. Just manage my money. And I want to make a profit in 5 years' time. That's honestly how they do it. And so they have to go by that criteria. They cannot short-term trade that money because their client has told them, you cannot do this with my money.
Yeah, so, but like it has to be compared by the size of the book as well, you know, because I'm pretty sure that your book wasn't any bigger than the bank's book, and that's why they're more risk adverse. I think I got that that word right. With their cash.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. So there's one thing that they all focus on and hedge fund managers all focus on, and they're called leading indicators. So they're just forward-looking indicators in the markets. They're economic data, you know, they come out once a month. They tell you a bit about how the market is looking. Is it healthy or is it wobbly? There's one piece of data. And seeing as I'm actually studying economics at the moment, there's one piece of data that economists absolutely love, which is actually not a leading indicator, and that's gross domestic product, so GDP of the economy. And that's not forward-looking at all. What I mean by that is every time a GDP is reported, you will get a bunch of retail traders who will always trade off these numbers. But the bigger money, the big money bank, that's not to say you can't make money day trading these things. Trust me, you can. And it's not my strategy, and I don't think it's yours either, Peter.
But it's more of like a coincidence indicator. Coincident?
Well, no, it's actually lagging because the report tells you about the previous 3 months. So they get a bunch of data out, okay, and it's reports quarterly, so it'll be 60 days, and it tells you what the previous 3 months looks like. That's all it tells you. But if you're managing other people's money, you need to be able to forward look, if you know what I mean, not look at the past, because you already know what went on during that month, because you should have been looking at coincident indicators. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So the coincident indicators told you how the month was working out. So that's telling you what's happening now.
Yeah, right now.
Lagging indicators are telling you what already happened. Forward-looking leading indicators are telling you what's most likely going to happen in the future. So every single professional retail trader, well, not every single, but if they've worked at an institution before, they'll have it already bred in their minds. And I know there was I think you still kind of look at, I know you certainly have an understanding of leading indicators, don't you?
Yeah. I think that when we took the PTM, one of my most favorite things was looking at the leading indicators and going down into the value chain and trying to find where the actual trade was.
Mm, exactly. So we won't dive too deep into examples of different leading indicators. I'll talk about two or three. In my opinion, the most important ones and ones that will come up on economic calendars all day long. You'll see them, you know, coming out once a month. And these are the ones that really move markets. So the first one is I always start with the United States. So a reason for that is they're the biggest market in the world. And when the United States sneezes, the whole world catches a cold. It's just the way it goes. The 2008 financial crisis started in the United States through the banks and the credit default swaps. And it just had a ripple effect. It destroyed the it made a global financial crisis.
Oh, yeah. I remember watching the FTSE. Jesus. Mm.
So the one in the United States, the most popular one in the United States, is called the ISM report. So the Institute of Supply Management Report on Business. It has two reports. One's called the manufacturing and the other's called the non-manufacturing. Now, everywhere else in the world, they're just called PMIs, so Purchasing Managers Index. So sometimes in your economic calendar, if you use one, you will see PMI, or sometimes you'll see ISM. Both of those are almost the same thing. They're both Purchasing Managers Indexes. So, but in the United States, it's called the ISM. So the ISM manufacturing makes up 20% of GDP in the United States. And the other 80% is made up of what's called non-manufacturing or services. So these are forward-looking simply because they ask, in the case of the manufacturing report, they ask a bunch of questions to like the purchasing managers of all of these top companies. And they ask them questions that are forward-looking. So what I mean by forward-looking is, imagine your company is Joe Blogs, and I ask you, what is the state of your book at the moment in your company? Like, how are new orders looking? What is your unemployment like in your business? What's your inventory like? So are they running out of stock, or are they overloading with stock? These things tell you a little bit about the business. Like, what if they ask Apple all of a sudden, who just brought out these iPads, which, by the way, are ridiculously overpriced. I really want one, but I'm out of principle, I'm not spending €1,000 on an iPad.
Well, we have to do a topic on Apple soon because there's just so much going on with their products right now.
Oh, yeah, it's crazy. But, like, let's take, for instance, like Apple, yeah. Like, look at the €1,000 iPad. Like, I think it's starting off, like, it's not far off €1,000 for the cheapest Pro that's coming out now. Like, it's still a tablet. It's not a laptop. And, you know, what if you start seeing things on their inventory where it was like all of a sudden they have an oversubscription of stock. They have too much stock. It means they're not getting rid of stock. Then you see things like, okay, now we know that people aren't buying their products. So that's forward looking. What is the cause and effect of this? Then we know that they're letting people go. So maybe they're having trouble. You know, you start piecing things together. And what if there's a trend in the entire ISM report where all companies are having the same problem? Then you know the cause and effect of that. So that's why this is a forward-looking indicator, and it can be charted. you can see when it's starting to downturn. So it has like a waterline of 50. So let's say between, so once we're above 50 on the chart, you know, we're seen as growing. But if like we're at, God, I think we're at 61 now, maybe, perhaps. I'm not quite sure. But if we get a reading of like 57 tomorrow, let's say a report is brought out, that still means that, okay, we're growing, but we're growing at a slower rate than we were last month. And then if it drops to 52 in the next report, we're still classed as growing, but we're growing at an even slower rate than we were the previous month. And that has a ripple effect on the stock market. And that's how they formulate ideas. And that's how people, professional traders, formulate a lot of their ideas. It's not for everyone, but like you can be just a plain like day trader or short-term trader and look at the markets and just use technical analysis, and that's fine. Or in my case, I love leading indicators. So I love to know the cause and effect, the ripple effect of these things. So right now in the United States, the only thing that isn't breaking down is actually the ISM, so manufacturing, which is strange. What do you think, P-Man?
Yeah, it's... I have to be honest that ever since we took the course, these things have tend to not be on my way that much. But yeah.
Well, look at it this way: the ISM drives the stock market, so we know that. We know when the ISM starts breaking down, historically the stock market has broken down. It's and the ISM has led the stock market by 3 to 6 months. So basically the ISM started breaking down 3 to 6 months before the stock market did. In history, that's, we can chart it. We've seen it. So if you start seeing things like that breaking down, you're just starting to formulate your ideas about where I'm ready to start getting short. That's how you look at it. Or maybe you're going to, I tell you what, I can talk defensive and cyclical for another day. But maybe you want to change your strategy to a defensive. You want to be more defensive on the market.
Or maybe take some risk off the table at least.
Exactly, yeah.
But like you have to look at other stuff as well, not just put too much emphasis on the ISM, even though it has a really good correlation to the stock market breaking down.
Well, what you're getting there is you're getting a sense of how manufacturing is in the United States. So now you're getting a sense of how business is doing in the United States. So now what you want to do is find out how the consumer is doing.
Yeah, of course. But it's like, would you classify it as like the first piece of the puzzle, the ISM for you?
I would say it's the first piece of many different puzzles, but it's one of the most important for me. Mm-hmm. And I know it's one of the most important for one of the biggest traders out there who's very, very popular, Raoul Powell, who I admire. I think he's a genius. You can check him out on Twitter. But the ISM report is so important. Simply because I've charted it for the past 50 years and I've watched every single recession happen and I've watched the effect of not just the ISM but leading indicators in general. Coming up into a recession. Like if you look at 2006, if you look at building permits, so they're just planning permission applications in the United States. 2 years before 2008, these started turning negative, you know, and I didn't know this at the time, obviously, because I wasn't educated in the financial markets. But 2 years before the recession kicked in, building permits get worse every month. The reading was going lower and lower and lower and lower. And the smart money in the United States were positioning themselves by buying insurance on the bonds failing in the United States through, what are they called, collateralized debt obligations?
Credit default.
Maybe I'm really wrong here. Maybe. but basically, building permits, the point that I'm trying to make is 2 years before the housing crash, the data for the housing market was getting very bearish.
Yeah. the data was there. There was clues. There was evident clues.
Yeah, it was telling you.
Yeah. Philip, you talked about Rahupal, and this is probably a good time to bring up the his Real Vision show.
Oh, God, Real Vision TV.
For all you guys, for all you guys who love fundamentals and want to go down that route, Rahupal has a... it's not a TV. It's like a Netflix of economics.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's not for everyone, but... because some of the videos can be quite long. Geez, I'm not really selling it, am I? But if you check out Real Vision TV, or else, do you know what? Message me. I have a link for it to get for free. So not for free, as in I'll get you a 14-day free trial type of thing. So send me a message on the Facebook page, or you know, get in touch, and I'll send you on a link for it. I think you've watched it a few times, haven't you?
Oh yeah, we watched it all the time when we did the PTM.
PTM, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm still glued to it. Like, I have a 6-year subscription to it.
You know what? I have to start watching it again, because I remember it was so fascinating watching. And I actually think they got Kyle Bass on the show like last month or something.
Yeah, they've had him on a few times. For anyone who doesn't know, he's one of the few guys. There were, like, there's obviously, everyone has seen the movie The Big Short. And you see, like, people like Baum. I can't remember his first name. But Baum and Michael Burry. Michael Burry came up with the idea of the crash happening. So basically the credit default swaps. And he, you know, he's the one who kind of came up with the idea of shorting the housing market. But what a lot of people don't know is so did Kyle Bass. And Kyle Bass was heavily loaded into these. There's another guy called Mark Hart also. He's been on Real Vision TV. He was also heavily short the market as well. But it's apparently Kyle Bass made over $1 billion out of that trade. So, and like he's on the, he interviews people on this show. You know, he's interviewed, what's that guy? Mark Cuban. Mark Cuban's even been on Real Vision TV.
That's a funny character.
Mm. So, like, there's a lot of successful people on it. It's interesting to watch. And you know what? We're not getting paid for plugging this. So, if Rule ever hears this, can I get some free subscription, please?
No, we want Rahul on this podcast.
Imagine.
Wow, I would go hide in a corner. Jesus.
You know what? Like, I don't usually get intimidated, but imagine if he hits you up with a question you just don't know the answer to. We can edit this after. I'm
pretty sure that would happen in any ways, but...
Yeah, oh, God, yeah. You know, because the guy isn't full of knowledge, but that's the way it goes. There's always someone out there who knows more.
Yeah, so Real Vision TV. Go check it out.
Anyway, finishing up on the leading indicators... So, yeah, that is something, obviously, this is something that's a little bit more advanced for people. Maybe some of you know what it is, maybe some of you don't. And again, if it is too advanced for the majority, please let us know, because we need to know, we need feedback from people. We need to know if we're going into too much detail. You know, maybe someday we'll be able to get a webinar going and we can jump on and actually show people live what these things actually look like. Who knows? You never know.
Yeah, we have to have a discussion on actually making this podcast a bit longer, Phil, because, like, time's up.
I know, yeah. It's terrible, isn't it? Well, look, I guess we'll wrap things up anyway. I hope everybody has a really great week in the financial markets, that you make not tons of money, but you make smart decisions.
Manage risk, boys, manage risk.
Manage the risk, yeah. And like I said, keep an eye on Sterling. I just have a feeling. I don't know. It could go either way. But look, I'm not saying take trades. What I'm saying is just watch it. Like, learn from it. Learn the cause and effect of Theresa May opening her mouth, you know, when she says, okay, we have a good deal. And if people believe it's a good deal, what happens? Or if we have a bad deal, what happens? Just learn from it, because it'll be planted in your mind. You'll know from last time when these things happen, this is what the cause and effect of it is. Like I said, with building permits declining in 2006, I've got sex in the brain, Jesus. But building permits in 2006, you know, that's declined 2 years before the actual stock market did. So the cause and effect, that's what you need to understand. And that's why I follow leading indicators. So goodbye, everybody. Say goodbye, P-Man.
Yeah, I think that was a pretty neat podcast, Phil, but I have to brush on my fundamentals for sure.
I shall teach you everything.
Thanks.
What is it? My Padawan?
Padawan learner.
Yeah, Padawan learner. You teach me technical analysis, and I'll teach you fundamental analysis. Agreed?
That's a good trade-off. Okay. I'll see you next week, Phil. And okay, everybody else.
Yep. Thank you all. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.